Island's Hot Stove Show with Glenn Geffner is on.
Tyson fires, Morneau swings, loops one into center field, out goes Etch, a long way out, he dives and makes the catch to save the night.
940 wins.
How about that for thrills?
Miami Sports.
Hey, hello again, everybody. Tonight we ring in the new year with our first edition of Marlins Hot Stove for 2015. With holiday season behind us, the start of spring training now just about 7 weeks away, as big leaguers across the country ramp up the intensity of their workouts after the first of the year, we're going to ramp up our intensity as well. Beginning tonight, our weekly Hot Stove show moves to 2 hours. We'll be with you from 7 to 9 every Monday night, right up until the start of spring training. That means more Marlins talk, more Marlins guests, and we hope more participation from you. I'll be keeping an eye on your tweets and Facebook posts throughout the show tonight, and we'll have plenty of time for your phone calls as well, so hope you'll join us in the program over the next couple of hours. Always looking for your thoughts on what the Marlins have done so far this winter, and we'd still like to see them do. Now, we do a lot of looking ahead on this show, but before we slam the door entirely on 2014, we'd love to hear from you. What are your favorite Marlins memories of the past season? I asked that question on social media a couple of days ago, did a little informal poll, and we'll relive some of those moments on the show tonight. Just about all of us have made a New Year's resolution or two in recent days. What New Year's resolutions would you suggest for your favorite Marlins players? Tweet me, Facebook me, or give me a call with your Marlins New Year's resolutions as we move along tonight. Maybe you've got some thoughts on the Baseball Hall of Fame class of 2015, which will be announced tomorrow. Who should make the cut? I've got some thoughts of my own. I'm sure you've got some as well. We can talk Cooperstown. We can talk anything that's on your mind as it pertains to Major League Baseball and the Marlins. Some of the 2015 storylines we'll be watching between now and 9 o'clock. Got a couple of great guests lined up for tonight as well. Coming up later in the show, I'll be joined by Marlins manager Mike Redmond from his home out in Washington. But leading things off tonight, going to talk with the Marlins closer, Steve Cisha, coming off a terrific 2014 season, his second full year as the Marlins closer. Cisha was absolutely on top of his game for Miami, saved 39 games, new career high, posted career best in a lot of categories a season ago, and a big part of what ought to be a terrific bullpen for the Marlins come 2015. Steve Cishek, our guest to get things going tonight. And Steve, normally we wrap things up with you with the Marlins. Tonight I'm going to do something a little backwards. I'm going to lead things off with you. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time, and Happy New Year, Steve.
Yeah, Happy New Year's to you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, first of all, for folks who don't know, Michael Moore, Steve Gordon, and Matt Latos aren't the only new additions to the Marlins family this winter. You and your wife, Marissa, celebrated the birth of your first child shortly after the season wrapped up. How's fatherhood treating you?
Yeah, it's been great. I'm actually trying to rush home now before she starts shrieking on your radio show. So she might be making a guest appearance pretty soon.
Well, that's all right. We got plenty of time. We're up to 2 hours now, so it's okay.
No, it's been great. You know, it's been challenging at times, but we're very fortunate to have a beautiful young daughter and who actually sleeps very well. So that was my biggest fear, is no sleep, but she's been doing great.
Wow, count your blessings. That's terrific. Now, I know you've been working out in Jupiter most of the off season, but with Christmas and New Year's now behind us, do you get that added jolt at the start of spring training just around the corner?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially with the acquisition we got this year, it's just been it's going to be extremely exciting going into spring training. It almost feels like 2012, but a lot better since last year. Yeah, we ended on a bad note with G getting hit in the face, but overall the year was a ton better than it was in 2013. And, with the moves we made, I feel like we're going to be way better than we were even last year.
You mentioned those moves. What's it like from a player's perspective? I know you talked a lot to your teammates in the winter. When you're sitting back in the offseason and watching how active the club has been and working to improve the roster?
It's definitely encouraging, especially when they sign Giancarlo to such a large deal. It's kind of like a statement that, they're going to do whatever they can to win ball games, and he's our staple. So obviously when they did that, we were expecting, other big moves that happened to support him, offensively. And sure enough, we did it. At one point it's encouraging because, our team looks a lot much better on paper. But also it's kind of sad because, you have a lot of good guys you got close with during the year last year. And we had an awesome locker room last year. So to see some of those guys go, it's kind of sad, but we also know it's a business.
Now, that's an interesting perspective, though. You lose a Casey McGee, who was such a big part of that clubhouse culture. You lose Chris Hatcher and Dan Jennings out of the bullpen. What is that transition like for you guys? As you say goodbye to some very close friends, some guys you went to battle with, and now bring in a lot of new faces.
Yeah, a lot of those For me, you know, DJ and Hatch, you know, we still keep in touch. You know, I play catch with DJ still every day, and work out with him. And then Hatch, you know, we still text each other. I actually texted him yesterday. So it's going to be kind of weird not having them around and everything, especially on the bullpen, because that's who you spend most of your time with. But then when you, again, like you said, losing Casey, I mean, he was, you know, unspoken. You know, I feel like he's our team captain, and he kind of kept everything together. And you saw how he was when Stanton got hit. Everyone got to see that side of him, you know, that wasn't on the team. So he was very valuable to us in the locker room. And sad to see him go, but we also wish him the best.
Well, let's talk about the guys who are here, and I want to talk specifically about the bullpen that you anchor. Chris Hatcher and Dan Jennings gone. They've been traded away. But for the most part, a very familiar group coming back. It's been fun watching your development since you got here at the end of 2010. We've seen A.J. Ramos and Mike Dunn continue to grow. Last year, a big year of progress for Sam Dyson. Brian Morris, a terrific pickup coming over from Pittsburgh. Anybody who watched the Royals run through October was reminded of what a dominant bullpen can mean. And it seems like this bullpen now, as you guys get more and more experienced, has a chance to be a real strength for this team in 2015.
Yeah, our bullpen was phenomenal last year. And, yeah, we lost some key pieces, but we also added to it. And, you know, like I said, that watching the Royals in the playoffs goes to show you that, you know, having a dominant bullpen like that is going to get you far. In fact, the Braves have always had a dominant bullpen. They've always been a solid team over the years. Nationals, obviously, have been really good. Now I feel like we have the best bullpen in our division, and it's really exciting to see, you know, how a lot of these guys have developed. You know, AJ coming up into 2012 has been, you know, awesome for us the past 2 years, and obviously Dunner has been here even longer than I have. You know, I've been here bits and pieces of 10 and 11. He was here of all 11 through now, and you know how he is. I mean, he's just, when he's on, he's one of the best lefties, I feel like, in the game out of the bullpen. So they're exciting to watch. Obviously, Mo was great last year, Morris. You know, Dyson was just, I mean, first time he's ever hit 100 was last year. I mean, that's incredible. We have some power arms. So it should be exciting to watch.
What about you on a personal level? As we talk with the Marlins closer, Steve Cishek, going into your third full season as a big league closer, you're closing in on 100 career saves already. With as little margin for error as a closer has, I know you never can allow yourself to get comfortable, but how much would you say your understanding of the role and what you need to do to be successful has grown over the last couple of years?
You know, I've understood that you really can't worry about what other people think. That's the kind of mentality I brought in the first time I got, you know, promoted to be the closer, I guess you can say. Because, you know, it's one of those roles where if you do your job, you're supposed to do your job. So everyone's like, oh, you know, you don't really think much of it. And then all of a sudden, if you blow a save, they're like, man, you suck. Like, they're just all over you. So really, you just got to just be able to shrug it, you know, shake it off and just forget about it and not really care what other people think. Because if you start letting things that like that creep in your mind, then, you know, it's just going to eat you alive. So just to go out there, realizing that all you got to do is give everything you have and trust your stuff. For me, just trusting in God and, you know, doing everything I can to honor him. And also, if I do that, I'm honoring my teammates as well, and that's all I aim to do.
A lot of the great closes over the years have talked about having a short-term memory. Is that key for you?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, if you have a failure, you can't be worried about what other people think. You know, I give myself half an hour to be mad after a game, frustrated with myself, but really it kind of eats me up for a little while. I'll give it till about I go to bed. And when I wake up the next day, if I hadn't gotten over it already, it's out of my system. I'm ready to get back out there. So actually, I took it back. I'm ready to get back out there after a blown save, like exactly after the game. I'm so frustrated. I just want to go back out there and, you know, get the job done, even though it's too late. But usually I just try to shake it off by the next day.
You know, it's funny. It's one of the most, maybe the most unforgiving roles, certainly in baseball, if not in all of sports. A starting pitcher can go out and give up 4 runs in the first inning and settle down and get the win. But most nights, if you give up 1 run in the one inning, you've got that one crack, that's it.
Yeah, so it can be definitely can be stressful. I think I've grown a bunch of gray hairs since obtaining the closing role. So yeah, there's not much room for error, but that's what also makes it so much fun is the team has put you in that position. They've played well all game to you know, put you in line for the save, you know, win the ball game. And really, it means so much just to go out there and get the job done for your team, not so much for yourself, but for the team.
You've grown some gray hairs, but no Fu Manchu yet, right?
If I could grow a solid Fu Manchu, I probably would, but it's almost a joke if I try to do it.
Well, you got a couple months still before opening day. We'll see what you can do. Hey, let's look back at your season in 2014. We're talking with Steve Cishek. The one thing that really stands out is your strikeout rate. You were above average in 2012 and 2013, about 9.6 strikeouts for every nine innings of work, but you shot up from there 11.6 strikeouts per nine innings last season. What do you attribute that to?
You know, I've been able to put lefties away almost, I think, I want to say more than righties. Usually, like, a righty matchup is favorable and something I'm a little bit more comfortable doing. But if I get ahead of a lefty, I've found that I can put them away with, you know, I can throw a slider in two different locations, and I throw a fastball that, you know, Salty calls the Jenny Finch that kind of rises away from him, it looks like. And I never really used it too much early on in my major league career. I did it a lot in the minor league, so I kind of found that pitch again. I just take a four-seamer and just rip it as hard as I can and just let it run away from a lefty hitter up in the zone and hope for a chase swing. If not, maybe a pop-up. But usually I try to keep it up there because, again, you have no margin of error. If I throw a fastball up and it gets catered by a lefty, then I blow the game. So it's really, I got to make sure it's the right pitch at the right time, and that's kind of what's been working for me.
Talking pitch selection, you used your fastball, it seemed, less, and your slider a lot more last year than you had previously. Is that something that just happened over the course of the season, or is that a conscious decision?
Something that kind of happened over the course of the season. Middle of the year, I was in trouble a lot. I was always trying to find a way to get out of a jam. Usually, when you're a jam, you go with your best breaking pitch. For me, it's the slider, especially against the lefties. I face a ton of lefties, and it's also my put-away pitch against righties. So, if I'm in a jam and this guy's in scoring position, I'm trying to pitch them backwards or keep them off balance and then use that fastball out of the zone to try to put them away. I had a rough middle of the season there, so I was really trying anything just to get through it and get a win for the team. So that's probably why those numbers were up. But, yeah, it's been pointed out to me before.
When you go through a stretch, you mentioned that little rough patch you had in the middle of the season. Is it one thing that you can point to? Is it a mechanical issue? Is it just one of those things, hitters go through slumps? Sometimes pitchers go through slumps.
Yeah, that's exactly how I describe it. There's like three times during the course of a season for me. I don't know if it's like that with everyone else. I've talked to some people and it is, but there's like three periods of the season where, for whatever reason, you just don't have the same feel as you did, a week before or whatever. Like, you just go through a spurt where you feel like no one can hit you. Then all of a sudden, something happens, and you feel like, man, for some reason, you just feel like I can't get anyone out. So you're almost like, behind. You pitch behind, and it's a kind of a bad feeling. But I also realize over the years that it's just going to happen. Sometimes you're just not going to feel that great for a little period of time. And, in order to get through that, I think the best pitchers, best closers are able to find a way to get the job done no matter what. And, for the most part, I gave up a bunch of runs in the middle of the season. But, even the runs I gave up, we ended up winning a lot of those ball games. So that's all that matters to me.
So at times like that, do you just put your head down and keep doing what you've been doing? Do you go into the video room? Do you spend more time with Chuck Hernandez? How do you try to, if nothing else, abbreviate that little funk you fall into?
Well, I think one of the problems with that, when you start feeling like that, you try to overdo things. Like, man, maybe something's wrong. You overlook some stuff on video. You just kind of do too much. Or during my throwing program, that's where I get most of my work done. I'll try to do extra. I'll throw harder to try to get this dead feeling out of my arm. And really, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just dead arm. You just go through it a couple times a year. And in reality, you just got to sit back and just realize that my velocity is the same. Everything's the same. I just got to trust it. My arm feels like garbage. I got to go out there and just trust what I got and, just get the job done no matter what.
This is Marlins closer Steve Cishek. Coming up later in the show, going to talk with the manager, Mike Redmond. Right now, quick break. When we come back, more with Steve Cishek. So stay with us. This is Marlins Hot Stove, taking up to 9 o'clock tonight on your home for the Marlins all season and all off season long, 940 Wins.
Keep your hand on the hot stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner. 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Talking baseball up until 9 o'clock tonight, as we do every Monday night. Ringing in the new year, our first edition of Marlins' Hot Stove here in 2015. And we're ringing it in right now with the Marlins' closer, Steve Cishek. And Steve, we were talking before the break about some of your pitch selection, the fastball and the slider. You've used a changeup at times over the years as well, and there have been times when you've said, you know what, maybe next season I might use that changeup a little bit more than I have in the past. Is that something you're still thinking about?
Yeah. Actually, I've been working on a split finger the past couple of years. And at times it's usable in a game and everything, but it's just tough when, you know, the game's on the line and the ninth inning to use your third pitch. Pitch that's pretty inconsistent. But I always tinker with it in the spring. I'll be definitely, trying to mess with it this spring again. And if it becomes a pitch that I'm confident in, I feel like throwing, then I'll use it for sure.
Is it something that every now and then you just break out just to give the hitter one more thing to think about?
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to have a third or fourth pitch, I guess you can say, since I throw two different fastballs. In your arsenal, especially against lefties, to have something to dive away from them like that at a different speed. But really, it just comes down to what gets out. And for now, the fastball and slider have been working.
Had a couple of fans on Twitter asking me to ask you about what your off-season routine is like. Can you take us through your progression between the end of one season and what you'd get ready for the start of the next year?
Yeah, I'll keep it simple. I usually take 3 weeks off at the end of the season and kind of just relax, do whatever. For me, we got a new home, so I've been building some stuff and just keeping busy because I can't sit still. I got ADD or something, and always doing something. But after 3 weeks, I start training. Right now, I'm training at Cressy Sports Performance in Jupiter. I used to go to his facility up in Massachusetts, so he's opened up a new spot here in Jupiter. So it's convenient for me. It's the same stuff I've been doing for the past 4 or 5 years. And I work out in the morning, afternoon. I have off to hang out with my wife and daughter, or go golfing, or do whatever. And I usually just train 5 times a week. 2 days out of the week, I'm doing my conditioning. The other 4 days, I'm getting after in the gym with the rest of the guys here. So that's pretty much it for me. And then I start throwing. Right around mid-December, I'll start playing catch again. So right now I'm playing catch with Dan Jennings, who just got traded to the White Sox, and we're at about 120 feet and progress until mid-January, start throwing bullpens, and that'll lead into spring training.
Who are some of the other guys you're able to either throw with or work out with? I know a lot of guys down in the area these days.
Yeah, there's quite a few people at the gym. A couple guys with the Marlins, minor league system. Really, you can throw with anyone. There's a college kids, a lot of kids on break. And really, if I just say, you want to play catch, someone's out there ready to go. Brad Hand's down here, Kohler's down here. They go to a different gym, but, if I need to throw with them, obviously it's open. We played catch last year quite a few times, and Adam Conley's in town. So there's still a lot of Marlins guys here and, guys that got traded, I guess. But, it's Florida. You're outdoors every day, so it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Kohler and Hand and Adam Conley as well. How different is your throwing program as you get ready to make 65 or 70 appearances and work about 70 innings from theirs when they're hopefully getting ready to make 30 starts and try to get to 200 innings?
Well, our throwing program's pretty similar. Just if you're talking to Kohler, he'll be like, I'll start throwing mid-December, something like that, and start throwing in November because he can't help himself. He's so eager to get going, and the guy's a beast. So he just gets started a lot earlier than me. But for the most part, we have a similar program. They might long toss more than I do, but from my arm angle, I get into bad habits when I long toss, so I stay at about 120 and just throw it as hard as I can. So in that regard, it's a little bit different, but for the most part, we're pretty much the same. His bullpens will just be a lot longer than mine.
Mm-hmm. As we wrap up with Steve Cishek, I know you've been down here a while now, but it's hard to change New Englanders' mind when you start talking sports. You're a big Patriots fan. They've got their hands full with the Ravens next weekend. What do you think?
Well, obviously got the Patriots winning that game, but it'll be tough. I know, 2 years ago, I went to the Patriots-Ravens playoff game, and it was actually the AFC Championship, I'm pretty sure, and Ray Lewis's supposed to be his last game, and as I was holding a Ray Lewis's last game sign, but unfortunately the Ravens took it to the Pats at home. Pretty devastating loss, so I'm looking for some revenge here.
Alright, hey, the baby was great. Very quiet.
Yeah, she's eating now, so we'll see what happens in a little bit. She usually likes to play screamy.
Well, she was terrific tonight. Back to work, back to being a dad. Steve, thanks for the time.
Yeah, you got it. Anytime.
Alright, take care. That is Steve Cishek, the Marlins closer, talking baseball tonight here on Marlins Hot Stove. A lot to talk about. on this show tonight. We've got the Marlins manager, Mike Redman, coming up in hour number two, and we'll get into the Marlins lineup. A lot of you have asked me on Facebook and Twitter to ask Red about what he might do with the batting order. But baseball-wide, a lot of other topics we want to get to over the course of the evening here tonight. I want to give you a chance to chime in on several different things. Top moments of 2014. Before we say goodbye to 2014 altogether, want to look back at some of the best moments the Marlins enjoyed and the Marlins fans enjoyed over the course of the last year. The team won 77 games, a 15-game jump from 2013 to 2014, looking for a similar jump here in 2015. But there were a lot of highlights along the way. I asked a few days ago on Facebook and Twitter for folks to chime in with their thoughts, and did kind of an informal poll. We'll get to some of your thoughts. If you want to tweet me or Facebook me now, if you want to call in and talk about some of your favorite moments of the 2014 season, now's a great time for you to jump online at 866-801-0940. We'll get some phone calls in the next few minutes, 866-801-0940. Going to look at some of the storylines in Major League Baseball in 2015 as we move forward in the show tonight. Some of the possible rule changes, looking back at some of the changes that were made for 2014 and how they might be altered for 2015. I asked on Facebook and Twitter a couple of days ago about New Year's resolutions that you might make for Marlins players, for the Marlins as a team. If you want to chime in with some New Year's resolutions, I've heard from a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter in that regard as well, but feel free to dial us up, 866-801-0940. And if we have some time later on, I want to talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame. The announcement comes tomorrow. We'll find out who the class of 2015 will be entering Cooperstown in July. Some slam dunks, it would appear. Pedro Martinez seems like an automatic. Randy Johnson, an automatic. John Smoltz seems very likely. Many think this is the year that Craig Biggio is going to get the call. Mike Piazza seems to be gaining some support this year, but a lot of interesting calls to be made there. What do you think about the Baseball Hall of Fame? Who ought to go in 2015? Who shouldn't go in? Now, where do you stand on the PED crowd? I've got some strong opinions there. And over the course of the night, I want to hear from you. Again, you can tweet me at Glenn Geffner. You can put a post up on my Facebook page, Glenn Geffner, or you can also call us up, 866-801-0940. That's the number to call to talk Marlins baseball. We're with you every Monday night from 7 to 9 as we count it down to the start of spring training. Now just about 7 weeks away. Won't be long for the Marlins descend on Jupiter. And actually some exciting news for Palm Beach County today as another hurdle has been cleared. And it looks like they're getting closer and closer to being able to build a second spring training ballpark in Palm Beach County. The Washington Nationals and the Houston Astros hoping to share a complex, and they're trying to get through some of the political red tape up there. There was a report in the Palm Beach Post today, a piece written by Joe Capozzi, a longtime Marlins beat writer, that it looks as though another hurdle has been cleared in that regard, and it might not be long. If all things go as they hope, they might be able to break ground in the spring, and might just be another couple of years before the Marlins and the Cardinals have some more company in Palm Beach County. It'd be great to have the Nationals and the Astros right around the corner, give you a chance to play some different opponents on a daily basis without having to travel very far. Then you'd have the Mets just up the road in Port St. Lucie, and you wouldn't have to make as many long trips as the Marlins have had in springs past. You wouldn't lose as much workout time at your complex because you're riding the bus to Vieira or to Kissimmee or to Orlando or across the state to Fort Myers or the Tampa Bay area. So that's exciting. Could have some company in Palm Beach County before too long. It'd be great for baseball fans up that way, great for baseball fans across South Florida if that gets done. So again, coming up later in the show, Mike Redman will join us. Also looking forward to talking with you. Top Marlins moments of 2014, looking for some nominations, some storylines heading into the new year. And don't forget about those New Year's resolutions. We know we've all made them for ourselves. What New Year's resolution would you make for a specific Marlins player? Let me know. Tweet me, Facebook me, or give me a call, 866-801-0940. For now, I'm going to take a quick break. Come back with more right after this on 940 Wins.
Marlins Baseball Hot Stove Talk with Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Back with you on this, the first Monday of the new year, talking baseball up until 9 o'clock tonight. Coming up later in the show, we'll be joined by Marlins manager Mike Redman. It'll be fun to catch up with the skipper. Got a lot to talk with Red about. Want to talk with you as well, 866-801-0940, the number to call. If you want to talk Marlins, if you want to talk National League East, whatever's on your mind in the world of Major League Baseball these days, mentioned the Hall of Fame. We mentioned New Year's resolutions you might make for your favorite Marlins players. Great moments of the 2014 season. Going to recount the the informal poll that I've taken and get you some of those great moments coming up here in the next couple of minutes. Do want to remind you that now is the time to start thinking about 2015 season tickets. There's a lot of excitement around this Marlins ball club right now with good reason. You look at what the Marlins have coming back, led by Giancarlo Stanton and that terrific tandem joining him in the outfield, Christian Yelich and Marcelo Ozuna. And you go down the line with the additions of Matt Latos and Michael Morse, Martin Prado joining this ball club, among others, with Steve Cishek anchoring the bullpen, Jose Fernandez coming back in the second half of the season, Henderson Alvarez, Jared Cozart. You go down the line, there is a lot of excitement about this Marlins ball club, and we hope to see you out at the ballpark a lot in the new season. Season ticket plans start at just $380. You can take advantage of the new $15 per game full season plan with great seat locations and a free Marlins jersey for every two seats you purchase. Place your deposit today and start enjoying all the savings and benefits of being a Marlins season ticket holder. Number to call is 1-877-MARLINS, or you can go online to marlins.com/2015tickets. Let's see, opening day at home will be, what, 4 months from tomorrow, April 6th, with the Atlanta Braves in town at Marlins Park. So just 4 months from tomorrow, the countdown is definitely on. But before we continue our look at 2015, I want to look back a little bit with you at the 2014 season. We mentioned 15 more wins for the Marlins in 2014 than in 2013. That was the biggest jump of any team in the National League, the fourth biggest jump in all of Major League Baseball last season, a much improved offense. You saw Yelich and Ozuna really come into their own in their first full big league seasons. Giancarlo had an MVP caliber year, not an MVP season. In the end, the baseball writers thought that Clayton Kershaw was just a little bit better on the mound, but Stanton had the MVP caliber year. We saw Henderson Alvarez break out and so many other great things for the Marlins a season ago. I asked on Facebook and Twitter a couple of days ago for your thoughts on favorite Marlins memories of 2014, and the votes I got were slanted very heavily toward three moments of this past year. We're going to work our way from number three to the top of the list. The first, number three in our voting, didn't happen on the field, didn't happen until after the season ended. Date was November 19th, the date that Marlins fans are going to remember for a long, long time. It was on that morning, November 19th, Jeffrey Loria and Michael Hill made the announcement. Marlins fans were eager to hear.
We're here to celebrate a landmark agreement today, not only for the Marlins organization, but for our entire community. I'm proud to confirm the reports that we have reached a long-term agreement to keep Giancarlo in a Marlins uniform for a long time to come, and hopefully for his entire career.
When it was all said and done, it was something that we all felt was the right thing to do. We have a common goal, and that's to win. And that's to win here in Miami. And Giancarlo shares that idea with us. And, you know, we couldn't be happier that we're here today, you know, celebrating that he will be a Miami Marlin for a long time.
That was November 19th, the day that Giancarlo Stanton signed his record 13-year $325 million contract extension. That's what Marlins fans chose as their third favorite Marlins memory of 2014 in my informal and highly unscientific survey. As for your second favorite moment of the last year, as you move back onto the field, it also involves Giancarlo. It came at Marlins Park on the night of April 18th, very early in the season. The Mariners were in town. Yoervis Medina was on the mound, and Stanton batted in the bottom of the ninth, a 4-4 game, the bases loaded, and nobody out.
Giancarlo swings and drives a ball high and deep to left center. It is way back there, and it is going to be up, up, and away. A home run, a grand slam. The Marlins win. Stanton comes through with a high drive to the left of the home run sculpture.
That was number six of Giancarlo's league-leading 37 home runs that he slugged in 2014. It capped a 5-RBI night. Gave the Marlins one of their most memorable victories of the season, an 8-4 win over the Seattle Mariners. But in your eyes, it wasn't number one. It wasn't your favorite Marlins memory of 2014. Number one came June 20th at Marlins Park. Marlins would beat the Mets 3-2. Henderson Alvarez got the win, but he'd need not one save from Steve Cishek, which he got. He'd need two saves from Marcel Ozuna. The Marlins left fielder on that night would have to save the game twice over the final two innings.
The 3-2 to Campbell. Swinging a line drive. Base hit left field. Here comes Young. Right around third. Ozuna the throw to the plate. And Wright is out at the plate. Ozuna throws out the tying man for the second out of the eighth. He's got that cannon arm. We've seen him move from right field to center field, now to left field. He just showed it off. Payoff pitch to Young. Swinging a fly ball left field. This is going to tie the game. Ozuna's back. He will make the catch. Runner tags coming home. Ozuna fires to the plate. Salty. Got him! Got him! Got him at the plate! The ball game's over! There was no way Ozuna was going to throw him out. But Ozuna, a perfect throw on the fly. He's out at the plate. The ball game's over. The Marlins win 3-2. Marcell Ozuna threw out the tying man in the eighth. He throws out the tying man in the ninth. This one is over.
It was your number one favorite Marlins memory of 2014. I was just a little bit excited that night myself. Marcell Ozuna with that terrific arm, a game-changing weapon. And on that night, it helped the Marlins to a 3-2 victory over the New York Mets. What did we miss? One of my favorite plays here, wasn't in your top three, was the catch Danny Echevarria made in Colorado in extra innings when the Rockies had a chance to win a ball game. They had the winning man at third and two outs in a marathon ball game at Coors Field. Justin Morneau flared a ball out into left center field. Looked like it was going to be a game-winning hit for sure, but Danny Echevarria went out and made probably his best defensive play of the year. And when you talk about Etch and best defensive plays of the year, that's saying a lot. But when you consider all that was on the line, if he doesn't make the catch, the Marlins lose the ball game. For me, it was the best play he made all year. And it got some consideration in your votes that you cast on my Twitter and Facebook pages, but we didn't make the top three. Stanton signing number three. Stanton's walk-off slam against the Mariners on April 18th was number two. And those two Marcell Ozuna throws to the plate to nail the tying man David Wright for the second out in the eighth inning, and then the tying man Kirk Nieuwenhuis, when he had no chance at all, as the play-by-play guy told you. He had no chance, but somehow he made the play, ending the ball game, giving the Marlins a 3-2 win over the Mets back on June 20th. That was, in your mind, in our very unscientific survey, the Marlins' top memory of 2014. What do you think? What did we miss? Give me a call, 866-801-0940, the number. You can also continue to tweet me or Facebook me. Just got a tweet a minute or two ago from Chris, who said the Ozuna cannon throw to the plate was his number one memory. Jeff Baker's walk-off hit against the Nationals was his second favorite of the year. There was a lot of support for a walk-off hit that Giancarlo Stanton had in the ballgame after he had made a costly error earlier in the ballgame, but he came back with the walk-off hit later in that game, helped the Marlins pull out a victory. There were a lot of great moments, and the hope is there'll be even more in 2015 as the Marlins get set to do battle in what ought to be a very intriguing National League East division. We can talk about this division more as we go on tonight. The Nationals, who won the division a season ago and won it handily by 17 games over the Mets and Braves, who finished tied for second, two games up on the Marlins, they're loaded. There's no question about that. They've really, for the most part, stood pat since the end of the 2014 season. You've seen the Mets bring in Michael Kadir. They'll get Matt Harvey back after Tommy John surgery at the end of the 2013 season, cost them all of 2014. You've got the Marlins, who have really bolstered their roster. You've got the Braves, who've made some interesting decisions. They've brought Nick Markakis in. They have a new outfielder in Markakis to play right field. They've traded Justin Upton a big bat away. They traded Jason Hayward away. So two of their three outfielders are gone. They've gotten a little bit younger. And the Braves, a team that at this point in the offseason look as though they may take a little bit of a step back in 2015 as they look to really build things up for the opening of the new ballpark in 2017. And then you've got the Phillies, who are in full-scale rebuilding mode. And we've known for the last several years this ought to be coming. And finally, this offseason it is. They've traded Jimmy Rollins away. They traded Antonio Bastardo away. The Phillies, a couple of days ago, sent Marlon Byrd to the Cincinnati Reds. They're getting younger, trying to get a little bit more athletic. Still a decent chance they might deal Cole Hamels before it's all said and done this winter. So the Phillies, projected by most at this point, still with a lot of offseason in front of us, as the team that will bring up the rear in the National League East. The question is, can the Marlins make that leap over the Mets, over the Braves, and make a run at the Nationals, who are the prohibitive favorite in most people's mind in this division? But the Marlins certainly closing the gap. Mets feel like they've closed the gap as well. Ought to be a lot of fun to watch it all unfold in 2015. Looking ahead to the new year, want to invite you to save an important date, February 21st. It's a Saturday. It's now only about, 6-7 weeks away. It'll be the Marlins winter warm-up at Marlins Park. Again, that date's Saturday, February 21st. Bring the family to the ballpark for a day of fun. Be able to purchase single-game tickets for the 2015 season for the first time. Select your seats for season tickets and mini plans. Get autographs from Marlins players and alumni. And enjoy games, activities, music, and entertainment for fans of all ages. Don't miss it. Winter warm-up coming up Saturday, February 21st at Marlins Park. For more information, go to marlins.com, your one-stop source for all your Marlins information throughout the offseason. Going to take a break. When we come back, we invite you to join us, 866-801-0940, the number to call if you want to talk some baseball. We're going to look at some of the storylines across Major League Baseball that we're eager to see unfold over the course of 2015 when we return. Look at maybe some of the rule changes ahead of us. Got owners' meetings coming up next week, and it appears as though Rule 7.13 and instant replay are going to be among the topics the owners discuss when they gather next week. We'll see what unfolds. They're going to talk a little bit about some of those 2015 Major League Baseball storylines when we come back, so stay with us. This is Marlins Hot Stove on 940 Wins.
Baseball's burning questions all winter long. Winter long. Fire up the stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner on 940 Wins.
Right around third, Ozuna the throw to the plate, and Wright is out at the plate. Ozuna throws out the tying man for the second out of the eighth.
Miami Sports.
Glad you're with us talking baseball until 9 o'clock tonight. At the top of the upcoming hour, going to catch up with Marlins manager Mike Redmond. In the meantime, some time to take some of your phone calls, 866-801-0940, the number to call if you want to join us. You can also tweet me at Glenn Geffner or drop me a note on Facebook, Glenn Geffner. Let's head out to the phones for the first time tonight. Christian in Miami, welcome to the show.
Hey, Glenn, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. I wanted to ask you, the Marlins are looking for a fourth outfielder right now, and lately speculation has been on Ichiro Suzuki or Nate Shields. I think Shields would be a good bat from the left side and has a strong arm. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Christian, it's a good thought. Those two names have been reported a lot over the course of the last couple of days. Nate Sherholtz first by Joe Fracero on MLB.com, and today I saw Clark Spencer with the note about Ichiro being a possibility. Two intriguing players. And here's the thing from the Marlins standpoint. At this point, you've got your three regular outfielders, Giancarlo Stanton in right field. You've got Marcelo Ozuna in center, Christian Yelich in left, and you figure they're going to be out there just about every day. But you've got to be prepared in the case of injury to have somebody who you feel confident sticking in any one of those three positions on a daily basis for a while. And I'd like to think that in 2015, Mike Redmond's going to be able to maybe give Stanton, Yelich, and Ozuna the occasional day off, which he really wasn't able to do a season ago, and I think you saw each of those guys wearing down a little bit down this stretch. And it might just be one day a month, maybe a Sunday afternoon before a Monday day off for one of those guys, and the Tuesday night after the Monday day off for another guy, and you get 2 days off for the price of one. I think it would be beneficial if you can bring in a guy like the players you mentioned, a Sherholtz and Ichiro, guys who have played on a regular basis in the past at times, so you feel comfortable doing that with. Both of those names you mentioned are left-handed hitters. When you look at the Marlins bench right now, Jeff Baker, a right-handed hitter, is the one lock you have on that bench. You'd like to have that lefty complement. Sherholtz, a guy who is not coming off his best year. He began the year a Cub, finished the year in Washington between the two stops, coming mostly off the bench, played 122 games. His average really dropped. He hit just 195 after hitting 251 the year before. He's a 253 lifetime hitter. He hit 21 home runs for the Cubs playing almost every day in 2013. Last year, only 7 home runs. But as you mentioned, Christian, he's a good defensive outfielder with a very strong arm. He's played a lot of right field primarily over the course of his career. Very little center field ever at the big league level. So he doesn't completely fit as a guy who you could trust in center field. But he's an interesting guy. And then Ichiro, even at this advanced age, continues to swing the bat very well. Ichiro turned 41 in October this past year. So he'll start the season, he'll play the full season at age 41, but he still hit 284 for the Yankees last year, 143 games, had a 324 OBP. You know what you get with Ichiro, his defense not what it once was. He's a guy who earlier in his career, 07, 08, saw a decent amount of time in center field, but really hasn't played much center field since then. So while his defense in right field isn't what it once was, he's still a serviceable guy out there. I like both of those names. The only thing is, neither one of those guys does the one thing I mentioned, which is give you the opportunity to play all three outfield positions potentially. Now, when we look at other bench roles and who might be a utility infielder, for example, Jordani Valdespina is a guy who's still in this organization who we saw a year ago. Valdespina, a guy you could put out there in center field in a pinch. You could always slide Christian Yelich over to center field and put somebody else in left field. So there are different things that you can do in trying to put this roster together. But both names you mentioned, Christian, that have been reported, Ichiro and Sherholtz, veteran guys. They've both played on winning teams over the years. Both have terrific reputations in the clubhouse. And both are pretty intriguing players, neither one of whom you would think would break the bank. So I don't know. As the days move along, maybe you see some other names pop up. But those are two very intriguing names that have been reported. I think both of them are pretty good fits.
All right. Thanks, Glenn.
All right, Christian. That's a long answer for you. Hopefully we got to what you had in mind. As we move along, 866-801-0940, the number to call if you want to jump online as well. Mention some of the more interesting storylines heading into the 2015 season across Major League Baseball. Nick Cofardo, the terrific national baseball writer in the Boston Globe, wrote a piece yesterday where he ran through the 10 biggest storylines in his mind in baseball for this season. And I think if I gave you 13 or 14 storylines, each of these 10 would be on it. So I'm going to run through his list, even though his order may not mesh entirely with mine. He talked about the return of Alex Rodriguez being the number one storyline in all of baseball heading into 2015. Served that 162-game suspension, A-Rod back to the Yankees this season, unless there is still something they can do about it. He's 39 years old. He's got two degenerating hips, but he's owed $61 million over the next three seasons. He could make as much as $30 million more if he reaches various home run milestones along the way. Can he hold up physically? How much will A-Rod play? Remember, the Yankees have brought Chase Headley back to be their everyday third baseman. They've added Garrett Jones from the Marlins. He's expected to DH against right-handed pitchers, so the thought is that A-Rod may be nothing but a DH against lefty pitchers. If he hits enough, they're going to get him in the lineup, but how much will he hit? How effective can he be with those two bad hips, having missed almost the last two full seasons, all of 2014 and all but the very end of 2013? How big a circus will his presence be for the Yankees this spring throughout the year? How much media is going to descend on the Yankees just because of A-Rod? That's one of the big storylines heading into the new year. You got a new commissioner in 2015, Rob Manfred replacing Bud Selig, certainly something to keep an eye on. Now, it's not like Manfred is new to the scene. He's been the commissioner's right-hand man for years. He was a key player in recent labor negotiations. He was front and center in baseball's efforts to combat PEDs. He's talked about his early priorities being speeding up the pace of play and marketing the game to a younger generation. So Rob Manfred, the new commissioner, certainly somebody we'll be watching in the new year. Nick Cofardo mentioned a couple of names that we like to talk about, one of them in particular. Giancarlo Stanton and Mike Trout, the two new young faces of the game. What will they do on the field next? And Cofardo asks, what will Giancarlo do coming back from being hit in the face by Mike Fiers last September? That comeback, certainly something we'll be watching very closely throughout the spring and into the early part of the season. Doesn't seem to be something the Marlins are very concerned about. They're very confident Stanton will come back strong. We'll ask Mike Redmond about that coming up at the top of the hour. The Cubs, the Giants, both among the big storylines in baseball heading into the new year. The Cubs, with John Lester now anchoring the rotation, some great young talent. They've got Joe Maddon at the helm in 2015. How close are the Cubs to ending that 106-year World Series drought? Don't think you're going to find many people who will tell you that 2015 will be the year for that, but the Cubs certainly making strides. What are the Giants going to do after winning the World Series for the third time in 5 years? Do they suffer their every other year slide in 2015? Do they win again, maybe fan the flames of that dynasty talk? They've lost Pablo Sandoval to the Red Sox. They may still have move or two in them. What about Madison Bumgarner? What kind of years the postseason hero going to have after a brilliant 2014, an even better postseason run for Bumgarner? But remember, he threw a total of 270 innings overall last year between the regular season and the postseason. How does he bounce back? We'll be watching that. The Red Sox, last in 2012, World Series champs in 2013, last again in 2014. Can Hanley and Pablo Sandoval, plus a revamped rotation, lead the way to another last-to-first turnaround in Boston? Offense across Major League Baseball at its lowest level in 34 years in 2014. What happens in the new year? Teams averaged fewer than 4.1 runs per game last year. You've got defensive shifts to deal with, more big arms on the mound, more dominating bullpens. Does that trend continue in 2015, or does the pendulum begin to swing back? What about Pete Rose in the new year? Does Rob Manfred look at the possibility of Rose's reinstatement of the game any differently than Bud Selig has? Rose may look at 2015 as a great opportunity. You got a new commissioner and also the All-Star game in Cincinnati coming up this year. We'll see what role he's allowed to play on baseball's big stage in July. Chris Bryant with power numbers way down. Cubs have a 23-year-old phenom on his way, third baseman, expected to make his big league debut after he hit 43 homers in the minors last year. He's 6'5", 220. As Nick Cafardo pointed out in his piece in the Globe, Nelson Cruz of the Orioles, the only big leaguer to hit 40 home runs last season in all of baseball, just one player at 40 home runs. In 1996, 17 players hit at least 40 home runs. In 2006, only 11. Last year, just one. Is Chris Bryant the next in line with the Giancarlo Stantons of the world, the next big power source in Major League Baseball? What about Clayton Kershaw? He solidified his place as the best pitcher in the game with a third Cy Young in four seasons in 2014. He was also the NL MVP, beating out Giancarlo. But for Kershaw, things didn't go well in October. He lost both of his NLDS starts against the Cardinals. He was tagged for 11 runs on 12 hits and 12 and two-thirds innings. What does he do for an encore in 2015? I got some other storylines that hit a little bit close to home. We'll talk about over the course of the remainder of the show here tonight. Teams on the rise across Major League Baseball, some intriguing ball clubs, including the Marlins. What happens with all these pitchers coming back in Tommy John surgery? What an epidemic Tommy John surgery was last year. Jose Fernandez, Matt Harvey, among those coming back. How will they bounce back in 2015? And possible rule changes, Rule 7.13, maybe changes to instant replay. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show as well. But when we come back on Marlins Hot Stove, we're going to talk with the Marlins manager, Mike Redmond. He joins me next, so stay with us on 940 Wins.
Stove Show with Glenn Geffner is on.
Nice and fires. Morneau swings. Loops one into center field. Out goes Etch. A long way out. He dives and makes the catch to save the night.
940 Wins.
How about that for thrills?
Miami Sports.
Talking baseball. Marlins baseball. Major League Baseball until 9 o'clock. Tonight we expand our show to 2 hours every Monday night, having turned the corner, moved into 2015. And as we begin hour number two on our show tonight, I want to welcome the Marlins manager, Mike Redmond, to the program. Red, got to start with a medical update. We had heard you had an unfortunate incident on the tennis court a month or so ago. You wound up undergoing surgery to repair a torn Achilles just after the winter meetings. We know you went down. How you doing? And now we don't have Red right now. We'll have to await that medical update when we do have Red. I'm sorry. I thought we had him on the line already. But Red heading into his third season as the Marlins manager here in 2014, expectations certainly much higher heading into the new year than at any time to this point in Red's tenure. Marlins with that big jump in 2014 after the 62-win season in 2013. And now we got Red on the line. Red, want to begin with a medical update from you. We know what happened, unfortunately, on the tennis court about a month or so ago. You had that surgery on the torn Achilles. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm recovering nicely. I just got done in the cages with my kids, so I'm not able to. I got to sit in a chair, but I got my cast off about a week ago, and I'm kind of moving around, so I'm good. I'm good. Ahead of schedule and ready to go.
So we expect you at full strength for the start of spring training, right?
Well,
near full strength.
Full strength, but I'm going to be good enough to go.
Outstanding.
I'll be able to stand, and I won't be doing any sprints, but. I probably wasn't going to do any sprints anyway.
Sounds good. Hey, last time we saw you was the day that Giancarlo signed the contract. The question then was, what else could be done to upgrade this ball club this winter? We've now got the answer. How much fun has it been for you to sit back and watch this roster come together over the last month or so?
Well, it has been fun. It's been, definitely a lot of work. I think, getting together with, the baseball guys, Mike and DJ David and Jeffrey and talking about a ton of names and trying to figure out how we could upgrade positions and get better. And I think have been able to do that. It's exciting. I think, we wanted to make a statement and I think we've definitely done that this winter.
And now the work begins here in a little bit over a month. With all the new faces, I want to talk to you a little bit about your thoughts on putting a batting order together with this ball club. I asked folks on Twitter and Facebook what they'd like me to ask you about over the last couple of days, and the overwhelming majority of people I heard from had lineup questions. Now, you haven't gotten everybody on the field together yet, but you've had some time to think about it. Are you set at all on the batting order you'd like to see start the season?
Well, no, not. I wouldn't say I'm sad at all. I think a lot of things that to think about as we go forward. Where do we? Do we hit Yelich third? Do we bump Stan to four? Do we hit Yelich third? There's lots of different directions we go. I think, but like anything, you kind of go by what you see, and I think the fun part about spring training is to be able to get down there and try some different combinations and see where guys fit and see where they hit. Maybe Yelich doesn't hit well in the two hole. I mean, you never know. I mean, you kind of play it by ear and you kind of see when you get down there, and that's the fun part about spring is you get to try some different things and see how it all comes together. But I think, the pieces are going to fall probably about where everyone expects, but we'll see when we get to spring training and that'll work itself out.
Are there any absolutes for you at this point? You mentioned Stanton might not necessarily hit third, he could hit fourth. Are you set on D. Gordon leading off? Are there a lot of things that are still completely up in the air for you?
Well, I think there's still things in the air. I think I want to see D. Gordon lead off. I want to see, kind of how it plays out. I mean, I think, would I like to have D. Gordon lead off? Sure, of course, yeah. I mean, I think he's your prototypical leadoff guy, and I think that's the reason we got him to be that guy. But the fun part about, like I said, spring training is to maybe hit him a couple times in the two hole, see what happens. I think like I said, probably going to see him. He'll be our leadoff guy opening day.
Yeah, it's interesting because at one point it was easy. It seemed like you had Gordon, Yelich, Stanton, then Morse comes in, probably hits cleanup for you. But the Martin Prado addition kind of threw this all up in the air a little bit because he's a guy who's had a lot of success out of the two hole. And basically, he's a pro who's had success wherever he's been over the years. But last year, you didn't have a prototypical leadoff guy when Furcal went down. You didn't really have the prototypical cleanup man. Casey filled in, did a great job. Yelich was a terrific job at the leadoff spot last year. This year, it looks like you got more of those prototypical guys. And yet, with all the talent, especially when you had Prado in there, it's not as easy to put the whole puzzle together.
Yeah, no doubt. And everybody talks so much about the lineup, and really, at the end of the day, if we get guys on base for Giancarlo and give him more opportunities to drive in runs and to force them to pitch to him, the better off we're going to be. And the job at the top of the order, whoever it is to get on base. Yelich, think about, we were talking about him hitting second last year, and he ended up leading off and doing great and having a tremendous year. with Prado, he's a guy that you could hit fourth. I mean, you could hit him in a lot of different areas too. The great thing for me is to be able to get these guys together and see which combination works the best. As you've seen over the last couple of years, we've tried a lot of different combinations, especially my first year. And it's going to be nice to have, guys that have more of a track record and you kind of know what to expect out of these guys when you pencil them in the lineup.
Talking with the Marlins manager, Mike Redmond. Red, wherever you hit D. Gordon, give me your manager's perspective and also the thoughts of a former catcher about how a guy with his kind of speed can change the game.
Well, he's a game changer. I mean, this guy flies. He wore us out last year. We could not get him out at all, like a lot of different teams. He's still a young player. He's still, improving. The biggest thing for him is just to get on base and to utilize his speed, whether it be bunting or walking. I know he's a guy who likes to swing the bat. I remember Denard Span when I played with him. He was a guy that kind of similar, liked to go up there and swing the bat, kind of learned how through his years to take pitches and to work counts. And you see what he's been able to do now. So, this guy is still improving and getting better, but this guy has a chance to get on base and score a ton of runs for us, and that's what we're going to expect out of him.
One of the things you hear a lot is when he's on base, you get – more fastballs, better pitches for the hitter who follows him in the lineup. As a guy who's been behind the plate and called a game, is that as true as you hear it talked about all the time? Does that really change the way pitchers attack the next hitter?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it is, because maybe in a breaking ball count, when you know it's a breaking ball count, but you know that that guy has got a chance to steal you, you're going to maybe call fastball every once in a while. I wouldn't say that you do it all the time, but there, generally you are going to be more aggressive with fastballs with guys that can really hit or can really run. And so I think with him on base, does it change the dynamic? Absolutely. And I think the guys that are going to really thrive are going to be the middle order type of guys, whoever that ends up being, if it's Yelich or a G or Prado. I mean, those guys are going to get a lot of fastballs when D. Gordon's on base.
Now, this team didn't have the horses to run a lot in 2014. You didn't have a burner like Gordon in the lineup.
Yeah.
And I know there's also that reluctance to risk losing a man on the bases in front of Giancarlo. How do you plan to handle the running game with D? Do you ever hold him up, or does he have the green light?
No, I think a guy like that, with that type of speed, you give him the green light. You know, will there be maybe some situations where we want to hold him back? Sure, but I would say the majority of time, you know, he's gonna be free to run. I mean, we want this guy to utilize his speed, and like I said, he's a game changer with his speed. I know at times last year it was difficult to run Yelich just because, you know, we didn't want to run the risk of him getting thrown out. And Yelich did a great job of picking his spots and stealing. He was very successful stealing bases. So it is definitely something that, you know, when guys get thrown out, you know, that looks bad. But at the same time, too, I'd love to be aggressive and more aggressive on the bases. We just have to be smart about it.
Mm-hmm. So much of the talk this winter has been about the players the Marlins have brought in. I want to ask you about the one guy who is no longer here, who really made a big impact last year on and off the field, in the clubhouse as much as on the field. What did Casey McGee mean to this team in 2014, and how do you replace that presence?
Well, first of all, we all love Casey McGee, and I think you know, when you lose a great teammate you know, it's definitely, he'll be missed. But like I told him, I mean, hey, you know, you're back on the map, brother, and you had an outstanding year, and you did something that a lot of guys haven't been able to do, and that's bring themselves back from being out of the game and having a great year. And you know, I think Casey did everything that he could possibly do for the Marlins, and he was a leader. He had a great year. He contributed. He made us better. And he's a special player and has taught a lot of our guys. And I know that down the road, when Christian Yelich and Marcell Ozuna and these guys talk about the impact throughout their careers, Casey McGee's name will definitely pop up.
Now, he goes to San Francisco. You bring Michael Morse in from San Francisco. Morse seems like a similar kind of presence, and the guy who is coming off a World Series win. You also hear great things about Martin Prado in the clubhouse. I know at one point Chipper Jones called him the best teammate he had ever had. From a manager's perspective, you got to like bringing guys like that in.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I think that was very important. One of the things that I've been very consistent with Mike and DJ, and you know, making sure that we bring in chemistry guys and bringing in solid characters from that clubhouse for our young kids to continue to grow and develop and understand what it takes and to not only be a great teammate, but be a great big leaguer. And these guys are a perfect fit for where we're headed. And these guys will continue to be a tremendous Our young players can learn a lot from these guys, too. And that's definitely part of the character that I wanted in that clubhouse. And it sounds like we got another couple great guys.
We're joined by Marlins manager Mike Revin. Got a few more minutes with Red coming up. Want to take a quick break, though. Hope you'll stay with us. More Marlins Hot Stove right after this on 940 Wins.
Baseball's hot stove season is here. The Marlins' Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Talking baseball till 9 o'clock tonight. Get back to more of your phone calls at the bottom of the hour. But now I want to head back out to Spokane, Washington. Marlins manager Mike Redmond on the line with us. Red, you look ahead to spring training. It won't be long now. Are there some specific things that you and the staff really want to make points of emphasis going into the spring?
I think there's definitely things that we've thought about and talked about as staff going forward and what we want to work on. I think no doubt, our pitching, our pitchers bunting is something that we definitely can improve on and get better at, and will probably be more of an emphasis this year than ever. And even them swinging the bat a little bit too. I'd really like to get them, swinging the bats a little bit earlier in spring training. It's definitely something that we can improve in. We got a lot of new guys, so I think, we have some work to do to get the new guys up to speed of our bunt plays and first and third coverages. So most of it will be business as usual. These guys have been around a long time, but just get comfortable to how we like to run spring training. But I'm excited to get down there and get a chance to work with these guys. It's always a good thing after the new year to start talking about baseball again and to get a chance to see these guys come together as a team is going to be a lot of fun.
Areas of competition this spring. The lineup, for the most part, appears set. You look at the fifth starter, you look at the bullpen, you look at the bench. Is that what you're kind of focused in on?
Yeah. I think those are always, it seems like every year you're talking about your, last couple spots in the bullpen or your fifth starter. Those seem to always be your biggest competition and how your bench fills out. I know we'll have as it looks like right now, a pretty young bench. So I'm sure we'll be looking for guys to step up and show that they can hit off the bench. But those are always fun battles. That's the fun part of spring training, is getting those guys out there, getting them some at-bats, and really see who steps up and who wants it.
You look at your starting rotation right now, in whatever order you eventually decide. You got Henderson Alvarez, you got Jared Cozart, Matt Latos, Tom Kohler. A lot of folks on Twitter are asking about the Dan Heron situation. He's kind of the wild card there. At this point, do you have to basically proceed assuming he's not going to be here?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know. It's hard. We're trying to get a feel for really what he's going to do. Obviously we're hoping that he would want to pitch. But right now, it's look. I guess from what I've heard and read, that it's not looking good. So, we'll have opportunities, and we'll see how that one shakes out.
Mentioned this earlier in the show. Owners' meetings coming up next week. Possible rule changes for 2015 are going to be on the table. They're going to be looking at Rule 7.13 again, based on what happened last year.
Which one was that?
Which one was? Yeah, we never saw that affect the outcome of a game or anything along the way at any point.
Yeah.
What would you like to see happen with Rule 7.13, having watched how things played out over the course of the last year?
Well, I mean, I'd love for that. I'd rather have that rule just go away and be like it was. I don't think I'm the only one to say that, but it's been very confusing, and I think I made it very clear what I thought of the rule, and it's just tough. It's tough to teach. It's tough to really get a feel for where we're at, and hopefully we'll get some clarification, and we'll be able to move on.
In talking with other managers and in talking with umpires, to me, the sense I get is that most of them feel the same way you do. Is that your feeling also? Other managers and even the umpires would like to see that rule go away?
Yeah. I think now that I've had a year where we've had that rule, no doubt. I mean, it has led to a lot of confusion, and everybody seems to be on the same page. Not everyone, but most everyone. There's still some guys out there that really feel like they need to protect that catcher, and there's no doubt none of us want to see a catcher get hurt. And I think last year you saw nobody ran over anybody last year, and I think that's good. I think if you're trying to get away from home plate collisions, then the rule was success. But I think we all saw the part of the rule that needs to be fixed.
What about instant replay? Having lived with that for a year now, would you like to see any changes the way that played out?
Well, I like the fact that we're trying to get the call's right. I think it's great. I think we realize that, you know, how many close calls there are and how many could go either way. And I think, I don't know that any of us anticipated that, that so many of those calls would be that close. I guess if there was just my own personal feeling, I don't really enjoy the fact that I have to go out on the field on a bang-bang play. I don't like that. I wish there was a different way that you know, I don't have to go out there quite as much. But like I said, at the end of the day, as long as we're going to have replay, then I'm going to go out there and give us if we need a few more seconds to make a call and get that call changed, then I'm going to do it. But I think we were very successful with the replays last year, and a few of them won us games. I think maybe the bigger surprise is that people, I don't think, anticipated how important instant replay was going to be. And I know, you know, Pat Schein, who did our replay, did an outstanding job, and it's a very important role in a ball club.
To your point about not having to walk out there as a manager, I think most would agree that took more time than anything. When they talk about trying to speed the games up, we've seen a lot of stats associated with instant replay last year. The stat I never saw was what percentage of the time did the manager go out and then actually just turn around and walk back without challenging a call? I would imagine it was more than 50% of the time you and other managers went out there but didn't end up challenging at all, and you've wasted 90 seconds.
Yeah, well, no doubt. And the pace of the game is always an issue. But the first year replay, we didn't, you know, none of us knew how it was going to go. And we didn't know at first which calls were going to get overturned until we got out there and got in the field and got them to review some plays and to see what was going to be, you know, the bang, bang plays at first. Where's the threshold with what they're going to overthrow or overturn? So I think that's why you saw a lot of managers, especially early the first few months, go out there more, give more time to make sure that, you know, they tried to get the call right. And I think this year will probably be different. I don't think we'll go out there quite as often. I think there's ways now where we can get of ourselves with the players have a better feel for the instant replay, where we can give ourselves a little bit more time without having to go out there so much. And plus, you know, we now know what to expect. So hopefully it should be a quicker process.
Now, to me, the easiest thing to do is if there's a call you may want to challenge, you immediately yell out to the home plate umpire and you say, "Hey, Joe West, give us a second here." And Joe West pulls out his stopwatch, and if you've got 30 seconds or 45 seconds or whatever, when you get to that time limit, he turns to you and says yes or no. And you never have to leave the dugout, and if you say no, then the game resumes immediately. And I think you save some time like that, and it's easy. You don't have that circus. If you're going out there making small talk with Larry Vanover for 90 seconds.
Yeah, and I think maybe an easier way is just maybe to get on top of the dugout and kind of that kind of signals to everyone that, hey, we're looking at this play. You know, and try to get the infielders, maybe the catch goes out and talks to the pitcher for a second or goes halfway out there, just gives us a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's ways that we can kind of maneuver around that to give ourselves a little bit more time. But, yeah, it was tough, and the umpires were great. They really were. I mean, they understood what we were going through in the process, and everybody was fine. I mean, there was no anger that we were out there. They never got frustrated. At least they didn't show it. And we were trying to work together because we were all kind of in the same boat, not knowing what to expect.
Mm-hmm. We began talking about your injury. Let's wrap up with a couple of other injury questions of great importance to Marlins fans. What do you hear and read on the progress of Jose Fernandez's rehab?
Yeah, he's great. He's feeling great. He's on schedule. I know that I've gotten the reports, and it's everything is positive, and that he really looks great. He's gotten himself into tremendous shape, and his arm's feeling very good, and it's just continuing that process. And I think we've been pretty consistent with the date and timeline for him being June, July. I don't think that's changed, and I would look forward to him being on the mound, throwing a bullpen sometime in spring training. So that'll be definitely an exciting day for all of us.
Be the best midseason acquisition any team in baseball makes in 2015, that's for sure, when he comes back. And what are you hearing about Giancarlo, and what, if any, is your degree of concern about him coming back from getting beaned in September?
Well, I've talked to or texted G a couple times, and he's doing great, and he's feeling fine, and everything's good. They're working on getting him some protection for that area with a helmet, like a specific kind of guard for his helmet. And as far as I know, they're working on that, and sent him some prototypes, so he's testing those out. So I would expect him to have some sort of a guard to protect that area from getting hit again. But I'm not anticipating any problems. I think probably nobody's anticipating spring training more than him to get in there, get in that box, and take some swings and get comfortable. I think, like any competitor, there may be a little bit of hesitation there the first couple times he faces a live pitcher. But I think, you know, after a few at bats, he's going to be fine and realize that, hey, this is no big deal. I've done this a million times.
Fingers crossed. Red, thanks for the time tonight.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Marlins manager Mike Redmond, our guest on Marlins Hot Stove. Going to take a break. When we come back, we want to get to more of your phone calls. I know we had some folks on the line before we jumped on with Red there. If you want to rejoin us, 866-801-0940. The number to call, 866-801-0940. Going to talk more storylines for 2015. Talking about some of those rule changes we just addressed kind of briefly with Red there. And again, looking for New Year's resolutions you'd make for your favorite Marlins players as we look ahead to this new year, now 5 days old. Join us, 866-801-0940. You can tweet me at Glenn Geffner. You can Facebook me. Our final 30 minutes of Marlins Hot Stove coming up next, so stay with us on 940 Wins.
Keep your hand on the hot stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner. 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Well, we've talked with Steve Cishek, the Marlins' closer tonight. We've talked with manager Mike Redmond. And for the rest of our program, up until 9 o'clock tonight, we open up our phone lines. We want to talk with you, 866-801-0940, the number to call. You can also tweet me at Glenn Geffner. Send me a Facebook message as well. Let's head back out to the phones. George is on the line of Miami. George, thanks for checking in tonight.
Yeah, Glenn, I was just wondering how the Marlins' top prospect of last year is progressing, the young pitcher they got.
Tyler Kolek.
Pardon?
Tyler Kolek is the guy you're thinking about, I would imagine, the number one pick out of Shepherd, Texas last year. He's I would imagine, based on how things went for him in his pro debut, he's still getting his feet wet at this point. You know, this is a pitcher who's only 19 years old, 18 coming out of high school last year. He's a big guy, 6'5". He throws hard. Some will tell you he might have the best fastball of any pitcher who has ever come out of the draft, which goes back to 1965. But he still has a lot of development in front of him. And as much fun as it is to talk about a Tyler Kolek now, I think it's important to remember that this is not a pitcher, as highly regarded as he is even, who's going to make an impact here in Miami anytime imminently. You know, you look at some of the stars on this Marlins team, and you got to remember, this isn't like the NFL or the NBA where players come out of the draft and make an immediate impact at the major league level. You know, Giancarlo Stanton, obviously a superstar in the game, drafted in 07, got to the big leagues pretty quickly, but in his fourth pro season in 2010. Christian Yelich, same thing. It took him until his fourth pro season, and that's pretty quick. And then every now and then you have a Jose Fernandez, who's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of guy, who was in only a second full pro season, his third year, when he made his big league debut in 2013, because of circumstances also. Remember all the injuries the Marlins had at the beginning of the season in 2013? Otherwise, Jose wouldn't have been here. So, you know, Kolek got his feet wet a little bit in the Gulf Coast League last year, and I believe the expectations for him to spend a good chunk of this year at Greensboro in the South Atlantic League. But, you know, as excited as people are about him, I think we got to be cautious and hold back and realize we may not see him in the big leagues for several years.
Yeah.
All right, George.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the call. Right. And in the meantime, you've got Henderson Alvarez, you've got Jared Cozart, you've got Matt Latos, you've got Tom Kohler, you've got Jose Fernandez coming back, you've got some arms like Justin Nicolino knocking on the door after the monster year at AA last year, Jose Urena, another young pitcher knocking on the door. It takes a while, with pitchers especially. So Kolek had a lot of promise coming out of the draft last year, and his day will come, but certainly it's not going to come anytime imminently. But George, thanks for the phone call. We were talking a couple of segments ago about some of the storylines to look forward to in 2015, and I mentioned teams on the rise across Major League Baseball. This is an exciting time to me for the game because you're not just talking about the same teams you feel like you're talking about every single season. It's not just the Yankees, not just the Red Sox, not just the Cardinals, not just teams like that. You've got the Marlins, who've had a terrific offseason, who feel very much as though they're going to be in the hunt for a postseason spot in the National League this year, and most folks around the game feel the same way. You've got a team like the Chicago White Sox that has spent a lot of money in free agency this year, certainly improving its lot. The Cubs have gone out, bringing Joe Maddon in to manage, bringing John Lester in with $155 million. The San Diego Padres, who have had a long run at or near the bottom of the National League West, they've had a long run with one of the worst offenses in all of Major League Baseball at Big Petco Park in recent years, but they've really bolstered things under the leadership of first-year GM A.J. Preller this offseason, bringing in Justin Upton, bringing in Will Myers, bringing in Matt Kemp, bringing in the catcher Derek Norris. These are teams you're not normally talking about heading into this season, and people are talking about the Marlins and the White Sox and the Padres and the Cubs heading into 2015. To me, that's a great thing about the state of the game right now. The Mariners, the Cleveland Indians, also teams that seem to be poised to make big jumps in the new year. Hopefully the Marlins at or near the top of that list when it's all said and done. I mentioned that last year was unfortunately the season of Tommy John surgery across Major League Baseball. So it's an interesting question to ask. What happens this year? In 2014, about 30 big league pitchers underwent ulnar collateral ligament reconstruction. How are they going to bounce back in 2015? Normally, 12 to 18 months is the timeline. That's what we're talking about with Jose Fernandez. Certainly going to be keeping a very close eye on Jose here in Miami. How does Matt Harvey come back with the Mets? You had several pitchers who underwent their second Tommy John surgery last year. Josh Johnson, who just signed a one-year deal with the Padres. The one-time Marlin, Chris Medlin, who at one time was the ace of the Braves staff, now looking to hang on, get back to the big leagues with the Kansas City Royals after his second Tommy John surgery. But especially when you look at Matt Harvey in New York and Jose here in Miami, those comebacks could go a long way toward determining how far some teams are going to go in the new year. It'll be very interesting to watch. Rule changes for the new year. Last year we brought Rule 7.13 in to protect the catchers. What kind of changes will be made for 2015? Remember, a couple of changes were made over the course of the year as they tweaked that rule a little bit during the season last year. Could the rule go away altogether? As Mike Redmond and many others around the game suggest they'd like to see. Doubtful, because the one thing that it did do, as Red pointed out, was it protected catchers. There were no violent collisions at home plate last year. That's a good thing. There's got to be a way, though, to improve that rule. Hopefully, when owners get together next week, they can talk about some ways to maybe do that. Instant replay, how do you tweak that? We talked about it with Red. Looking to speed the process up a little bit more than anything. That's a rule change we could look forward to here in the new year, 2015. I asked you if anybody had some New Year's resolutions they'd like to make on behalf of Marlins players for the new year. I'm going to start with one of my own for Jose Fernandez. We've talked about a lot. By all accounts, the rehab is going great. That's what Mike Redmond told us, reiterating that earlier in the show tonight. As Jose gets to spring training, as he gets on the mound for the first time since that surgery last May, we all know how competitive he is. We all know how much he can't wait to get back. My New Year's resolution for Jose Fernandez, though, is that he continue to do what he's done throughout this process. Listen to the doctors. Listen to the trainers. Continue taking your rehab one day at a time. You can't hit the fast forward button on coming back from Tommy John surgery. He's 21 years old. He's got his entire career in front of him. You don't want to rush anything in the short term that could have negative impact on the long term for Jose Fernandez. Marlins need a healthy Jose for the long haul, not just for 2015, but for 2016, 2017, and beyond. Major League Baseball needs a healthy Jose Fernandez for the long haul. So my New Year's resolution for Jose Fernandez, don't push yourself any harder than the medical experts say is okay. Now, many of you have chimed in with some resolutions on my Twitter and Facebook accounts. Benjamin on Twitter for Justin Nicolino, the top pitching prospect, says, hey, go out there and resolve to make the 25-man roster on opening day. That's some high hope for Justin Nicolino from Benjamin on Twitter. Nicolino had the monster year, winning 16 games at AA Jacksonville in 2014, helped the Suns win the Southern League Championship. He is very highly regarded, the Marlins Minor League Pitcher of the Year a season ago. The expectation is he most likely begins this year at AAA New Orleans, but Benjamin making that resolution for Nicolino. We'd love to see him make the opening day roster come April. Rodolfo on Twitter wants to see Jared Saldalamacchia resolve to shorten his swing and make more contact, cut down on the strikeouts. He also wants to see Giancarlo Stanton lay off pitches that are too far outside. Rodolfo, if only it were that easy. But nice resolutions nonetheless. Cliff on Facebook has a similar sentiment about Salty. Wants to see more contact from the Marlins catcher. Travis on Twitter wants to see D. Gordon become the next Emilio Bonifacio, but better. Get on base regularly, steal a lot of bases. To me, D. Gordon's got a much higher ceiling than Emilio Bonifacio has or had in his years here in Miami. Gordon's got a chance to be a really special part of this lineup on a daily basis. Bonnie, by the way, you may have seen the news, you may have missed it, reportedly agreeing to a contract with the Chicago White Sox. He'd been a free agent. It's a one-year, $3 million deal for Bonifacio from the White Sox. Bonnie with an option for 2016 at $4 million, or there's a $1 million buyout in there. So Emilio Bonifacio, the guy that Travis would like to see D. Gordon become. I think Gordon can be even better. I think he can be significantly better. But Bonnie, now a member of those White Sox. Roderick on Twitter wants to see a bounce-back season from Jared Saldalamacchia. He wants to see Stanton and Marcelo Ozuna resolve to walk more and strike out less. Remember, Roderick, that Giancarlo finished one walk behind the league leader in 2014, even though he missed the last 17 games of the season. Roderick also wants to see Christian Yelich compete for a batting title in 2015. That'll be fun to watch. Very possible that as time goes on, you may see Yelich battling for a batting title in the National League. Maybe 2015's the year. Pam on Facebook wants to see the Marlins resolve to never lose a lead in the new season. That's what we call setting our sights high. We'll talk to Steve Cishek about that one. Seth on Twitter wants the newcomers in this Marlins ball club to help lead the way into the postseason. And Sandy on Facebook wants to see the newcomers Michael Morse, Matt Latos, and D. Gordon live up to the high hopes that Marlins have for them. Those are some of your New Year's resolutions for Marlins players that you've shared with me via social media. Got a few minutes to go on our show. Going to take a break. When we come back, time for more of your phone calls. If you want to check in, 866-801-0940. Again, 866-801-0940, the number to call. Can also talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Cooperstown will open its doors to the class of 2015 tomorrow. Who is in that class? I'll tell you who I think ought to be in it, who I would vote for if I had a vote, which I don't. Who do you think ought to be in? Who do you think shouldn't get in? Let us know. You can chime in, 866-801-0940, or on Twitter or Facebook. More Marlins Hot Stove right after this.
Marlins Baseball Hot Stove Talk with Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Final few minutes talking baseball. Marlins Hot Stove, 866-801-0940. If you want to join the conversation here tonight, got a tweet from Cliff, who says he'd love to see Cody Ross come back to Miami, be the Marlins' fourth outfielder in 2015. The problem with Cody is he's not a free agent. He is signed year three of a three-year deal with the Diamondbacks coming up. And Cody, remember, had that gruesome hip injury that he suffered in 2013. Cost him a good chunk of that season, cost him a lot of last year. And even when he came back, I talked to Cody when we played the D-backs last year, and he admitted he still physically was not right. Played in 83 games, about half the schedule for the D-backs last year, but didn't see a ton of playing time down the stretch with a lot of youngsters playing, and he hit just 252 for Arizona, only a couple of home runs. Cody Ross, the 2008, 2009, 2010 guy, boy, to me, he's more than a fourth outfielder, but at this stage with the injuries and with the fact that he's an Arizona Diamondback, my guess is he would be a long shot as that extra outfielder. But boy, in his day, if you're looking for a guy to play any of the three outfield positions, give you great defense, swing the bat, bring energy, bring a smile to the ballpark every day, play the game hard, play the game right, Cody Ross, certainly a very popular Marlin for all those reasons during his years here in Miami. The Baseball Writers Association of America is going to announce the Hall of Fame class of 2015 tomorrow. Among first-timers on the ballot, Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez seem to be absolute locks. John Smoltz, maybe a tick below those two, but to me, he's also a slam-dunk first-ballot guy. Been a lot of talk about what to do with the steroid gang. Should riders be able to vote more than 10 candidates in a given year? Should the standard for entry into the most exclusive club in sports be lowered beneath the 75% of the vote necessary for election? I'm not a guy who supports changing those rules for election. They've worked since they were introduced back in 1936. Last year was the first time you heard riders complain about being limited to 10 selections, and half of the riders who turned in ballots in 2014 didn't use up all 10 spots anyway. You can debate that stuff all day, and I'm sure after the results come out tomorrow, we'll be debating that stuff for weeks, if not months, if not into next year. To me, though, it's a lot more fun to talk about the players on the ballot. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I don't have a vote. Those go to members of the Baseball Writers Association of America who've covered baseball for at least 10 years. But if I did have a vote, I think this year I would have filled all 10 slots. And here's who I would have voted for. Let me know what you think. You can call in 866-801-0940. You can also tweet book me or Facebook me with your thoughts on the Hall of Fame. The first timers for me, easy. Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz. Randy Johnson, you talk about a dominant pitcher in his era. There was no more feared pitcher in the game than Randy Johnson, particularly in his heyday in Arizona. Lefty hitters not only didn't have a chance against him, they didn't face him. There were very few left-handed hitters who ever faced Randy Johnson, who piled up the huge strikeout years, great numbers, was a big part of winning the World Series with the D-backs in 2001. Randy Johnson, one of the all-time greats, slam dunk Hall of Famer. Pedro Martinez, who I had the opportunity to work with in Boston, a guy who, to me, is an easy choice as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Again, you talk about a guy who was intimidating, was feared, who, compared to other pitchers in his era, put up absolutely dominant numbers. Look at all those seasons with the sub-2 earned run averages, the fear he put in opposing hitters. Pedro Martinez, an easy call. John Smoltz, as a starter and as a closer with more than 150 career saves, to me, an easy choice for the Hall of Fame, where he would join his longtime Braves teammates, Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine, who were inducted last year. Smoltz hung on a year longer, so he's on the ballot a year later. But John Smoltz gets my vote, and I think ought to get 75% plus to join Maddux and Glavine in the Hall of Fame come July. Now, last year, Craig Biggio came up two votes shy of election. I'd vote him in. This is his third year on the ballot. Would have had him on my ballot either the last two seasons. The expectation is that Biggio does get the call tomorrow. 3,000 plus hits, one of the great competitors in the game. You think about a guy who played three positions regularly at the big league level. Remember, he broke into the big leagues as a catcher, then went to center field, then to second base, where he really made his name with the Astros. But Craig Biggio, one of those killer bees with Jeff Bagwell, ought to become a Hall of Famer come tomorrow. Tim Raines belongs in the Baseball Hall of Fame, as far as I'm concerned. Now, he's a guy who, it does not appear, is going to get elected again this year. You're talking about arguably the second best leadoff man in the history of the game. He would definitely be on my ballot, but he will most likely not be on the 75% necessary come tomorrow. For me, Curt Schilling is a Baseball Hall of Famer. His regular season record has him right on the bubble, and for Schilling, the historic postseason successes as a Philly, as a Diamondback, and as a Red Sox, to me, that puts him over the top. I saw where Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated and the MLB Network said he was Don Drysdale with a better postseason track record. You think of what Schilling did, if he did nothing else in the postseason but what he did for the Red Sox in 2004, helping will that team through the ALCS, with the bloody sock against the Yankees, through the World Series sweep of the Cardinals. Curt Schilling, to me, ought to be a Baseball Hall of Famer. I'd also vote for Jeff Bagwell. We're talking about Craig Biggio, his longtime Astros teammate, the great Houston first baseman. I'd vote for Mike Mussina. When you look at the success he had over a long career pitching exclusively in the American League East, long time with the Orioles, then with the Yankees, Mussina, to me, is a Hall of Famer. And my last two votes would go to Mike Piazza, and he's a guy who's fallen short for several times in the ballot, seems to have some momentum heading into this year. He seems to be the biggest question mark, the guy right on the bubble who might get the call tomorrow, he might not. If I had a vote, it would go to Mike Piazza, one of the greatest offensive catchers of all time, and don't forget he was a Marlin for five games in 1998. And my 10th and final vote, tough call, but it would go to Alan Trammell, who is in his 14th year on the ballot. Only one more shot for Trammell. If he doesn't get elected this year, and he's not a guy who's gotten a ton of support, he's a player who, as far as I'm concerned, has been hugely overlooked in the Hall of Fame voting process over the years. 20 seasons, all with the same team, the Tigers. He was an offensive shortstop before swinging the bat at that position was in vogue. He was a six-time All-Star, won four Gold Gloves, three Silver Slugger Awards, had a huge postseason for those great 84 Tigers, culminated that October by winning the MVP award in the World Series when the Tigers beat the San Diego Padres in five games. Went on to manage the Tigers. He's been a longtime big league coach, one of the most positive, high-energy people I've ever been around in the game. For me, Alan Trammell is a Hall of Famer. We'll see if he gets the call tomorrow. Not many expect that he will. Now, I said it was a tough call, that 10th vote, because if I had an 11th spot on my hypothetical ballot, I'd have voted for Edgar Martinez. And Trammell and Martinez are almost interchangeable for me. Edgar belongs in the Hall of Fame one of these years. Yeah, he was a DH, but he was one of the great hitters of his era. Had a 312, 418, 515 career slash line. Career batting average of 312, career OBP of 418, career slugging percentage of 515. That 300, 400, 500 slash line is kind of the standard. If you have one season where you hit 300 and have a 400 OBP and slug 500, you've had a great year. Those were the career numbers for Edgar Martinez, 312, 418, and 515, more than 500 lifetime doubles, more than 300 homers, seven-time All-Star, won the Silver Slugger Award five times, played 18 seasons all for the Mariners. And again, the argument is, well, he was a DH. Well, he's the guy that the DH of the Year Award was named after. That's what kind of a DH he was. I think the Hall of Fame at some point has got to open its doors to Edgar Martinez and David Ortiz down the line. You add it all up. Edgar Martinez is a Hall of Famer in my book, although he would be number 11 on my ballot with only 10 spots this year. Personally, I can't vote for the steroid crowd. Bonds, Clemens, McGuire, Sosa, friends, they don't get my vote. Others who merit consideration but fall short for me include Larry Walker, Lee Smith, who when he retired was the all-time Major League Baseball saves leader, Jeff Kent, the all-time home run hitter among Major League second basemen, longtime Giant, Fred McGriff, almost 500 home runs. But you talk about players who dominated their era, who instilled fear. McGriff, to me, somehow, even when you look at the career totals, wasn't that kind of a guy. And Carlos Delgado, look at the career numbers. Delgado, a Marlin at one time, had great numbers. But the Hall of Fame is a step above, I think, where Carlos Delgado is. Gary Sheffield is a very intriguing guy for me. He's got Hall of Fame numbers, no doubt. And again, I come back to hitters who were feared in their era. They might have been a more intimidating hitter in the game than Gary Sheffield throughout his career. Terrific career, terrific teammate. You talk to guys who played with him. They had a tremendous amount of respect for Gary Sheffield. He was a Mitchell Report guy. He was mentioned in that Mitchell Report and at least for now is on the hold side for me. But another guy who played for the Marlins, was a big part of winning World Series here in Miami, and at some point we'll see if the Hall of Fame doors open for Gary Sheffield. Don't expect it, though, to be this season. That's all the time we have for this week. Want to thank my guests tonight, Mike Redman and Steve Cishek. Thanks to our in-studio engineer, Michael Komiak. And thanks to you for again being with us for another edition of Marlins Hot Stove. If you missed any of tonight's show or would like to go back and listen to past shows, all of our Marlins Hot Stove shows are available online at marlins.com/hotstove. They're also available as free podcasts on the iTunes Store. Don't forget, we're back with you again next Monday night from 7 to 9. We'll have more Marlins talk and more Marlins guests. When it comes to the Marlins, keep your radio dial locked right here on your home for Marlins baseball all season and all off-season long. Miami Sports Station, 940 Wins.